Hey everyone, thanks for tuning into this week's message. My name is Gregory and I'm part of the team here at Friends Church. Everything we do around here depends 100% on the generous donations of our local and online communities. That's people just like you who believe that life really is about leaving a positive mark on our world. So if you love what Friends Church is up to, I'd like to encourage you to contribute by going to friendschurch.ca. With that, let's jump into this week's message.
All right, good morning, everyone. Good morning. You all out there? This is the, I've said this before, but the Green Berets, because you braved the weather. It's like this is the spiritual group here, so we're glad you're here. Delighted that you're out. My assignment today, we've been doing a series on, we just started last week, a series on the seven deadly sins. And last week, Jeff did one on lust, and next week, Vince is doing one on greed around money and all that stuff. And so I get stuck in the middle. So last week, Jeff promised us a great sex life. That was awesome. And next week, Vince is going to promise us way more money, and I'm stuck in the middle. And so really, if we were to retitle the first 3 weeks, we call it Money, Sex, and Power. Because that's really what this is about today. And I want to talk to you this morning about pride. And it's a tricky topic. And I want to say this as a disclaimer at the beginning. There's a big difference between the theory of this message and the actual application of it. And it's way easier to talk about it than it is to live this. And I'm just going to say the theory of this is great. Living this out is a whole nother ballgame. And so my hope is this morning that we can make this really practical and stay grounded so that when we leave here, we'll feel a sense of empowerment around this whole idea of pride. So let me begin, as Jeff did last week, with a definition of pride and taking this right out of the dictionary. And a dictionary definition says it's a feeling or deep pleasure or satisfaction derived from one's own achievements, the achievements of those with whom one is closely associated or from qualities or possessions that are widely admired. In other words, if your kids have done something great, then you'll take some pride in that. And so it's this feeling or deep pleasure or satisfaction out of achievement. Confidence and self-respect as expressed by members of a group, typically one like, you know, Trevor was doing it this morning. Say, I'm proud to be here. This is a good place and it deserves our support, etc. And so typically one that has been socially marginalized on the basis of their shared identity, culture, and experience. And so we're very familiar with the pride days of the LGBTQ plus community and really making a stand for equality, etc. And so there's a taking a pride in that. And so in that context then, how on earth did the idea of pride make it to the list of the seven deadly sins? That's kind of the initial question that we need to wrestle with. And to understand the context, I won't repeat what Jeff said last week, but the context of this is coming out of the early church fathers, and through most of the first 15 to 1600 years of church history, a lot of the biblical context of pride was never seen in the same way this definition I just read was. And so let me give you a biblical definition of pride. It's an inordinate self-esteem or unreasonable feeling of superiority as to one's talents, beauty, wealth, rank, and so forth. Disdainful behavior or treatment, insolence or arrogance of demeanor, haughty bearing. And so we have this very negative view of pride that we pull out of kind of a biblical understanding. And in this particular topic, the Bible does take a bit of a bad rap on this. So I read through dozens of scriptures on pride, where it shows up in the Old Testament. And I will say this, never does the Old Testament speak of pride in any positive way whatsoever. there's always a negative slant to it. I pulled a couple out. So to fear the Lord is to hate evil. I hate pride and arrogance, evil behavior and perverse speech. When pride comes, then comes disgrace. Pride goes before destruction. So that was the Old Testament. And all of it comes out of that. So you can see then how the early church fathers that were kind of entrapped in this kind of biblical understanding saw pride in a very negative way. And they didn't give any credence to any positive affirmation of it. And so it was an easy make to the seven deadly sins. And interestingly, it was always put as the number one. So the seven deadly sins, every list always begins with pride. It's seen as the worst one. It's seen as the one from which everything else tipples out of, and seen in a very negative way. And we'll get to this in a second. But the Second Testament, or what we've known as the New Testament, is equally disdainful of the idea of pride. And it says that. Out of a person's heart come evil thoughts. And then it lists a whole bunch of these, like sexual immorality, murder, adultery, deceit, etc. And pride is in there. And it says this comes from the inside out. And that's, again, a context into which the early church fathers, in making this list of seven deadly sins, found this idea of pride. It's just this negative sense, and it's never really seen as a positive attribute. Now, to give the Bible its due, the Apostle Paul actually does give us a bit more of a balanced view of this. And he says in Romans 12, he says a warning about pride. He kind of starts out careful here. I would ask each of you to be emptied of self-promotion and not create a false image of your importance. Instead, honestly assess your worth by using your God-given faith as the standard of measurement. And then you will see your true self with an appropriate self-esteem. And so there's this sense of really seeing the true value of who you are and a healthy sense of self-esteem, which is what Paul was vying for. So that's the context of this. Where I want to go today is I want to dive into a little bit more around this idea of language and the power of language, and then the complexity of dealing with the issue of pride, because it is not a simple issue. And language in and of itself can be very, very powerful indeed. So when we say words, so when I say the word pride, for most of us here, how many of you here would see it more in a negative than a positive light? Be honest, like you'd see pride more in a negative than a positive, okay. And how many of you would see pride more as a positive thing? So most of us here would see it in a positive way. And I think some of that will generationally be there, because I remember I was raised, my grandmother was a staunch Methodist, and it didn't matter what you did, however good it was, she would always have the tagline at the end, be careful that you don't become proud about that. I'd come home and I'd score a goal in soccer. Hey, don't be bragging about that. You can't lift yourself up. You think you're all that in a bag of chips, and you're kind of like, she'd kind of make sure that you weren't being too proud. And that was a really important piece for my grandmother. I remember that, that being imprinted, kind of on my psyche. Today, we are more prone to see, as we can just take the survey here, more prone to see that pride has more of a positive aspect. So I want to contrast two lists of words. Do we have those up there, Chantel? And on the dark side and the light side. On the dark side, we could list words like pride. Okay, because there's a light side and a dark side to it. And things like hubris, comparison, arrogance, egotism, conceited, vain, haughty. And all of those is where we have an overinflated sense of self, where we're dropping names, where we are inflating something to make ourselves look good. And let's face it, it's part of the human condition. When you meet someone that's new, you want to appear, you want to make sure they like you. And so you share the good side and who you know. And yeah, I'm good friends with the prime minister. And I'm good friends with this movie star and that one and this person and that singer. And I drive this and I've got a Porsche in the driveway. And I've got six Ferraris at home, and I live in a mansion. And, you're dropping all this stuff to make yourself look good because you want to be liked. And so you want to stand out in a positive way. And all of those things invariably totally turn the other person off. Who knows what I mean? You've been around people and they're dropping stuff and they're just think, you know, and they're all, oh, and you just go, ah. It just doesn't come off well. That's not what you want to hear. It's not attractive. And so the idea of arrogance, the idea of hubris, the idea of egotism, we all get that when it's overstated to prove something, to endear someone to us, that we are impressed with them, there's a real dark side to that. On the other side, though, on the light side, there are words that come up that are like confidence. And this is, I think, what the definition of pride in the positive sense means, this idea of confidence or self-esteem, celebration of the things that we've accomplished and the things that we've done, dignity. So I'll give you an example. So a couple of weeks ago, my oldest daughter just gave birth and I got my first grandchild. Whoa. She is officially the cutest grandkid that has ever existed on the planet. And I have suffered through dozens of my friends showing me pictures of their grandchildren. And every time I have seen these grandchildren, I'm just going, yep, it's a baby. Great stuff. And there's not a whole lot of connection to that, right? It's just like, yep. So now I have my own grandchild and I am inflicting the same punishment upon all my friends. And I realize they're just going, yeah, it's a baby. But I'm going, but yes, it's my granddaughter. And there's a different connection to it, right? And do I feel proud? Absolutely. Do I feel grateful? Oh, you got it. Here's the interesting piece, though. My grandchild doesn't say a whole lot about me. And that's the nice thing. I've heard so many people say, hey, grandchildren, we should have started with grandchildren. Well, that's impossible because here's the deal. You haven't done anything to get grandchildren. It's your kids did. And you just get to play. And then when they poop their diapers, you give it back. And you get to be that kind of support on the side, if you like. But oh my goodness. So how many grandparents we got here? Come on, own it. Okay. And how many of you, when you're around your grandkids, your heart feels just full of pride? You got it? Absolutely. And that's a healthy piece. But you also recognize it says nothing about you. And so gaining a sense of identity or saying, okay, now I'm a grandpa, like having that label attached to me, the making me more than I was before, no. Doesn't mean I'm better than, it doesn't mean that I've grown in any way, there's no personal development gone on, it's a grandchild. And yet, it fills you with this sense of appreciation and gratitude and love that is wonderful. You know, and the other light side is dignity, self-respect, modesty, and I love the word humility. And so this sense of humility that I don't know about you, but I'm attracted to people that are humble. I'm attracted to people that have taken the humble route. Someone like Martin Luther King Jr. that gave his life for the freedom of the races. I admire someone like Mother Teresa, who was serving, and every single person she served, she did so with a tremendous sense of humility. And nobody kind of knew who she was. Now, later on in life, she was, do you know that she was the only person that could get on an airplane without a passport? She would just walk up and she'd go, I need to go here. And they go, okay, off you go. And she would never pay for a ticket. She would just get on board, no passport. She just got up because everybody recognized her because of her humility, that she served the dying. And I love the power in that, that she was able to give and to serve with such incredible humility on the streets of Calcutta. And there was such a beautiful sense of service that came out of that. And I admire her. Someone like Gandhi, who served with great humility. And it wasn't about him. He wasn't trying to make a movement. He was just simply trying to free a people, right? Nelson Mandela, people like that. That humility, it resonates with all of us. And we go, wow, that's the kind of life that I want to live. You think of Jesus even, you know, coming and really turning upside down the way the world saw leadership. You know, he took the towel and he took the water and he washed the feet of those people that he cared about. And they're going, no. But he's going, no, that's what this is about. Leadership is about servanthood and about humility. And so when you contrast those two lists of words, we all vacillate on the one side, on the light side, and then on the dark side. We kind of go along this continuum, and we wrestle along that continuum. So the complexity of pride is this. There's two pieces that pop up for us. The one is that we have, all of us, a universal need to fit in, a universal need to belong. It's part of how we're wired. We need to feel loved and accepted for who we are. And it's fascinating to me. I do a lot of work up north with our First Nations communities. And it's interesting to me that in listening to people's stories, that the qualifications to belong are really interesting, because so many people feel like they don't belong. A lot of people feel, growing up, like they're an outsider for whatever reason. And this need to belong is there, inherent in our humanity. And we're wanting to fit in. And so in wanting to do that and wanting to belong and feel loved for who we are, we wear the appropriate clothing and we say the appropriate things and we try to fit in. I remember going to Bible college. Now, let me share a context for this. So I had just left 2.5 years of being in drug rehab. So I went through a program and I stayed on as a drug and alcohol counselor. So that's the context I came out of. And very quickly I went from there and kind of had my conversion experience, and then boom, was over in this very religious environment. And in drug rehab, in case anybody doesn't know this, the language there can be quite colorful. You know, I mean, we come up with creative ways of using, you know, what most of us here would say is really, colorful language. And that was my context. And I didn't think much of it. I was just, you know, I would cuss with the rest of them. And then I go to this other environment where that kind of language is not accepted. Right? And I'm practicing, and I'm trying out for the basketball team, and I miss a layup that I shouldn't have missed. And I go, oh, really loud. And when I dropped the F-bomb in that moment, the gym went stunningly silent. And it reverberated around the walls. And I realized all of a sudden, hey, that's not appropriate for here. And it was like, oh, man, I've got to clean up my language here. Like, I can't just, you know, kind of say what's in my heart to say, because that was worthy of the F-bomb. Like, that missed layup, I shouldn't have missed it, you know. And sometimes there's situations in life that just deserve that particular expression, right? And so I wanted to fit in, so I cleaned that up, because my need to belong was driving something. It was pushing me in a certain way. And so that need to belong drives you on the one side, but on the other side, there's this need to want to kind of stand out and be who you are. You want to make a statement. You want to make your life matter. You want to be unique. You want to be valued for who you are. You're not wanting just to be a, like, kind of beige and blending into the background. And there's a tension that goes on there with this need to fit in and the desire to be special. Right? This need to fit in on the one side and the desire to be special on the other side. And all of us here, in a sense, are special, right? Now, I don't mean that in a derogatory. I mean literally that you want to experience yourself as fitting in, but also standing out. And it's a paradox. We are caught in that. And what do I compromise in order to fit in? right? And so we find communities and places that we're able to fit in, that we're able to be part of and belong. And sometimes we have cultural identities. You know, like this afternoon, there's the cultural identity as Calgarians of being a Stampeders fan. And so we collectively as a city, we are cheering on our team. And, you know, there's this kind of friendly rivalry between the green people and those of us that are Stampeder fans. And we know there's therapy, actually, for people that wear green. I mean, we get that. And so there's this desire to fit in and a desire to stand out, right? And culturally, we want to have that. Now, it's interesting because in a cultural context, there's actually a phenomenon that wants everyone to fit in. And I bumped into this a couple of years ago. But down in Australia, they call it, they have a phrase for it. It's called the tall poppy syndrome. And the tall poppy syndrome is where one poppy grows taller than everybody else, and there's a sense that they just say, no, we've got to cut it down. I don't know about you, but there's something that doesn't ring true about that. There's something about this tall poppy syndrome where we want to cut everybody down and bring everybody down to kind of this mediocre place, and we don't want anyone to stand out. And we say, well, who do you think you are? And you think you're something special. And all this kind of rhetoric that goes on. And so culturally, there is this kind of beige pressure, we call it peer pressure, to blend in, right? And that can have a negative connotation because we often, if you look up peer pressure, you think of it in teenage years of wanting to fit in. So you have to do certain behaviors. Some of them are good, some of them not so good. And so we have this pressure to want to fit in. And that desire to want to belong is so powerful that sometimes we will compromise our parents' values in order to fit in as a teenager. Because that desire to belong is so powerful that it pushes us there. And so this idea of the tall poppy syndrome can really push on us. Now, let's just read this. A tulip doesn't strive to impress anyone. It doesn't struggle to be different than a rose. It doesn't have to. It's different. And there's room in the garden for every flower. You didn't have to struggle to make your face different from everyone else's on earth. It just is. You are unique because you were created that way. And I like that context, that there's room in the garden for roses and tulips, and we're all different. We're all unique. And if we can struggle through that desire to connect and belong and be loved for who we are, and also to create that place, and to use that analogy, for you to be whoever it is that you're going to be. You don't have to apologize for you. And that feeling of feeling like an outsider, by the way, which is so common. It's fascinating to me doing the work we do. I'm blown away by how many people feel like they're on the outside. That actually it's kind of like there is no inside. The secret is there really is no inside, and everybody feels like an outsider. So let's just pull the curtain back on that and recognize that we all struggle to fit in. You know, I'm too tall, I'm too this, I'm too that. You know, in First Nations community, it's like I'm too white or I'm too brown or I'm too whatever. And there's all of this, you know, kind of labels that we have that create the sense that we feel marginalized or feel less than or don't feel like we belong. And so I want to dive into this a little bit and take a look at what does it mean to really truly be yourself and to come to that place where you're comfortable being with you, that we can come home to who we are. Now, if you look at psychological development, there is this kind of journey that we can go on that starts out at the bottom of just kind of surviving and having our basic needs met, if you like, and then we conform as we grow into our adolescent years, and we come to a place where the group becomes really, really important for us, that sense of conformity and being nurtured by those that are around you and being loyal to your family, your kin, your colleagues, and your culture. And then there's a place when you come into your late teens developmentally and you become a young adult where you're differentiating, right? You're pushing away from, I mean, let's face it, all of you have got teenagers. The first thing we do when we differentiate is we look at our parents and we go, not me. right? And so how do you differentiate from your parents? And by the way, it becomes more and more difficult to do. Because the more outlandish your parents are, you're going, okay, how do I rebel against the rebels? You know, we've got the, kind of the cultural thing from the hippie movement from the 60s and 70s, and the kids that were kind of rebelling against that, we're going, okay, we can't, you know, can't rebel. How do you rebel against them? Well, we'll come way over here, you kind of this goth and, you know, punk rock and all of this stuff trying to rebel against your hippie parents. And then, so what do the millennials do? How do you rebel against punk rock, for goodness sake? It becomes more and more difficult to differentiate yourself, you know, but you're always pushing away, trying to figure out who you are and what my identity is. And you start by saying, okay, not me. And so then you begin to look for your own identity, saying, who am I? Right? Who am I? And that's the piece that we wrestle with, all of us wrestle with. And once you figure that out, you individuate, and then, you know, if you look at Maslow's hierarchy of needs, you come to this place of self-actualizing. And when you come to that place, you go, well, it's not just about actually self-actualizing, it's now actually about coming back and joining and integrating with others. Because if you're just doing it by yourself, you've missed the point. And so any kind of journey that we go on, take AA for example, by the time you get to 12 steps, you're giving back because you are realizing that your sobriety depends on being able to give back. It's not just about you. It's about a community. The same thing in this context here. We talk about it all the time. That we come, we belong, we discover, we find out who we are, but then it's about, hey, you got to take water. You got to give back because it's only in giving that we receive. And so there's this journey that we go on of individuating and then coming back to community and belonging again. And sometimes you got to push away in order to come and find that beautiful and healthy place of integration. I love this quote. It says, the journey into darkness, because let's face it, that's what it is. For all of us, there's this journey into a dark place to figure out who you are. It's not easy. This work to figure out you. Because we all get up in the morning, we look in the mirror, and we know who that person is looking back at us. And if we're honest about it, that's not always the most happy, joyful moment of our day. Because some of us look at ourselves in the mirror, and we compare ourselves with others. And we end up feeling less than. We play sports on a team and we figure out pretty quick that we're not the fastest on the team. And how many of us have gone through this experience? They're picking teams when you're a kid, 6 and 7 and 8 years of age. And it's just a pickup game of hockey or shinny or whatever. And everybody's picking the fastest and the best and all this. And you kind of get left to the end. And the one captain says, well, I'll take him and you can have him. And when you're the one who's left at the end and you're going, what's wrong with me? And you figure out pretty quick that there's something wrong. And here's the problem. The guy that was picked first, he gets up in the morning and looks in the mirror too. And he doesn't exactly like himself. Because he's arrogant and proud and he's got all this other stuff going on. So even sometimes the curse of beauty and athleticism can work against you. And you can hide behind it. And you can hide behind wealth. And you can hide behind positions. Whereas inside, and that's why it says the journey into darkness has been long and cruel. And I've gone deep into it. This thought hit me the other day. Hell has many mansions also. It looks different for all of us. But we've all been there. We've all gone into our own dark place. And until we go into that dark place, we're not truly going to find that sense of self and identity. Marianne Williamson said this in her book, A Return to Love. And it struck me with a startling sense of in your face. She said, what happened to our generation? Talking kind of about the kind of boomers, millennials, like this, those of us that are alive today. He says, what happened to our generation is that we never grew up. The problem isn't that we are materialistic, apathetic, or narcissistic. It's that we're terrified. We're terrified to look in that mirror. We're terrified just to be who we are. And until we see that peace, we can't truly find and discover a healthy sense of self. And let's face it, this word pride has stopped a lot of us from looking. And we have beaten ourselves down and we have beaten ourselves up and we have put ourselves down because we don't deserve to be someone special. And this list of seven deadly sins has done us no favors. And a lot of those scriptures that I read earlier in the scriptures, man, they don't help us. We feel less than, and we feel put down. We can't hate ourselves into a version of ourselves that we can love. Self-loathing does not work. And don't look at me like, hey, Tom, you're the only person that does this. Hey, listen, I know that there's a part of us that gets angry. Who knows what I mean? You get angry at yourself, and there's parts of yourself you don't like, and you pretend, and you're trying to get by, but no. Love is what we're born with. Fear is what we learn. Spiritual journey is the unlearning of fear and prejudices and the acceptance of love back into our hearts. Love is the essential reality and our purpose on earth. To be consciously aware of it, to experience love in ourselves and others is life. To love yourself, to truly be proud of who you are, to authentically love yourself. That is the spiritual journey. That is the place that we are to grow into. And all of those little splinters that have happened to us in our journey to get to where we are today, all those quote unquote innocent comments that was said to us by a teacher or a coach or a friend on the playground or a parent or a sibling that says that you'll never amount to anything. You're not good enough. You're not this enough. You're not. For all of us, it comes down to we're not good enough. And when we recognize those splinters and we're able to take them out, we're able to truly come to the place that we can genuinely have our hearts filled with love for who we really are. I mean, I was thinking about this on the way in this morning. For a lot of us, when we're in our 20s and 30s, we're trying to prove something. We're getting after it. We're getting after life. We're finding our identity. We're driven by our ego. And that's not a bad thing. It's a healthy piece that we're going after that. And so if you're in your 20s and your 30s and you're going, man, I'm killing it right now. I'm doing everything I can to express who I am, etc. Good on you. It doesn't make it wrong or bad. But here's what I'm conscious of. As we get older, and I don't know if it's just automatic or if it is an age thing, but there's a sense that the ego starts to shrivel and shrink. I mean, I don't see any 80-year-olds walking around in designer jeans going, look at my jeans. They're 80. And they're going, I'm good. And it's funny when you get older and you dress a certain way and my wife has to kind of dress me these days and it's kind of like, that doesn't look good. I'm going, doesn't? I thought it did, you know? I have my favorite pair of jeans at Holt's. And you know what she calls them? She calls them the old man jeans. I'm going, come on now. But I didn't even see them that way because who cares? Right? And you can, when you get older, you can kind of leave the house and you kind of don't really check in the mirror. It's like, oh my goodness, I left like that? Because there's nobody left to impress anymore. My parents have both died and it's like, there's not a whole lot of people left to impress. And I think with age, the ego does shrink and I think there is a sense that it starts to dissolve. I want to end this morning by reading something to us. And in order to do this, I know most of you have already heard this. Just blank the screen there. Chantel, would you do me a favor? Would you just put your feet flat on the floor? Just sit up in your chair for a moment. And I want to read this to us as we close this morning. And I'm going to ask you that you would just close your eyes and just listen to these words. I know you've heard them before, but I want you to listen to them and I want you to take them into yourself. These were written by Marianne Williamson, and they got quoted by Nelson Mandela in 1995. And he had lived 27 years in solitary confinement. And he forgave his captors. And from his prison cell, he changed a nation and changed our world. And when he was inaugurated as the prime minister, the first democratically elected prime minister of South Africa, in his inaugural address, he said these words: "Our deepest fear is not that we are inadequate. Our deepest fear is that we are powerful beyond measure. It is our light, not our darkness, that most frightens us. We ask ourselves, who am I to be brilliant, gorgeous, talented, fabulous? Actually, who are you not to be? You are a child of God. Your playing small does not serve the world. There is nothing enlightened about shrinking so that other people won't feel insecure around you. We were all meant to shine as children do. We were born to make manifest the glory of God that is within us. It's not just in some of us, it's in everyone. And as we let our own light shine, we unconsciously give other people permission to do the same. As we are liberated from our own fear, our presence automatically liberates others. May you today be liberated to be all of who you are. Let your light shine. Because if you were standing up here looking at you, I just want to say you are brilliant, you are gorgeous, you are talented. Go and have an amazing, amazing day. God bless.